Hello from the Audible Local Ledger, located in beautiful Mashpee, Massachusetts, serving the Cape, the Islands, and the South Coast as part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main MAIN source for accessible community news and information. The Ledger delivers print, information, and entertainment to the blind, those with low vision, and the print impaired, read by our Cape Cod and South Coast volunteers, as well as select reading services from around the state and country. You may sometimes hear their content, but it's the Cape's very own Audible Local Ledger, and its Cape and South Coast supporters that have allowed us to broadcast local news and information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for 24 years, and of course, throughout the pandemic. My name is Eric. I'll be reading you selections from the e-edition of today's Fall River Herald News as part of our South Coast Hour. Half an hour of Fall River, half an hour of New Bedford. We'll start with the weather, as we always do, on the south. It looks like we're going to have a very nice week ahead. Partly sunny, a little windy today, high of 66, low of 43 in the overnight. Tomorrow, Wednesday, there'll be sun. Mostly sun, some clouds too. High of 67, low of 41. Thursday, sunny, with a few clouds passing by. High of 71, low of 44 on the south coast. AccuWeather tells us that Friday is going to be partly sunny with a high of 71, low of 44 in the overnight. And Saturday, sun and clouds. So every day has sunshine, none of them say rain, and a little bit of wind, and you're getting up into the 60s and 70s, so either a light jacket or maybe even a sweater. And you can head outside and enjoy the sunshine, take a walk, have a seat, enjoy sitting outside again. Moving to the front of the paper, where we keep everything you would ever want to know about Jaisal Correa's trial. We will move right into that. The headline reads, Old School Corruption. Prosecutor lays out case of lying, cheating, and stealing. The defense calls Correa so dumb and shifts the blame to co-conspirators. By Josie Good, Dan Medeiros, Linda Murphy, and Lynn Sullivan, all of the Herald News in Boston. Jaisal Correa II was a mayor of old school corruption who was happy to find a new illegal revenue stream shaking down marijuana vendors when the money he took from investors in his Snow Owl app company dried up, according to federal prosecutors' closing arguments made Monday. Not so, argued defense attorney Kevin Reddington, who said his client was dealing with savvy businessmen who invested in the company he started fresh out of college, and that the federal government brought in a conga line of questionable witnesses who had much to gain as co-conspirators who were granted immunity or plea deals. The prosecution and the defense made closing arguments Monday morning and laid out two very different depictions of the former mayor at Joseph Moakley United States Courthouse. To hear his own attorney describe him as not the brightest bulb when it comes to doing business stands in stunning contrast to Correa's own portrayal of himself as a savvy young businessman, a pitch that launched him to political success, becoming the city's youngest mayor. Following closing arguments, U.S. District Court Judge Douglas P. Woodlock presented his instructions to the jury. Jurors will begin their deliberations Tuesday morning, today. Originally, there were 11 women and 3 men on the jury with 2 alternates. However, on Monday, Woodlock announced that he had excused one juror to ensure the integrity and health protocols in place in the courtroom. That allowed one more person to be in the courtroom. Correa's father, who's also named Jaisal. Correa's mother and fiancé have been in the courtroom throughout the trial. His father and grandmother were on the list of potential witnesses, but were never called to testify. Correa paid close attention to the federal prosecutor's closing and PowerPoint presentation that revisited the numerous exhibits and bank's records introduced into evidence. Correa faces 24 counts, including tax fraud in relation to his app company Snow Owl, and extortion and bribery in relation to an alleged pay-to-play scheme he set up with marijuana vendors looking to do business in Fall River. The prosecution's argument. Assistant U.S. Prosecutor Zachary Hafer said Correa showed early signs that he intended to defraud investors with his constant pitch to investors that he had a proven business background and sold an app while at Providence College that made him hundreds of thousands of dollars. Hafer said his lie allowed the snow owl con to go on. He said that over the past 2 weeks, the jurors have heard overwhelming evidence of Correa's greed and hubris, and that they've heard overwhelming evidence of lying, cheating, stealing, and shakedowns. He convinced and persuaded people from all walks of life to do what he wanted, Hafer said, and what he wanted was money, and what he wanted was power. Hafer then walked jurors through the case, methodically taking each witness's testimony one at a time in the order they were first presented. Hafer noted all the different stories Correa told about his first business, the Find It Networks. Even though his former business partner, Alec Mendez, testified that it made little to no money, several investors and even an ex-girlfriend told different tales relayed to them by Correa of him having sold the business or had it acquired for differing sums of money, ranging from several hundred thousand to even several million dollars. When Correa, at age 22, first ran for mayor, Hafer said he had no problem looking voters in the eye, claiming his company was successful and he was making money for his investors. "That is someone who will say anything to get what he wants," said Hafer. Hafer reviewed the testimony of one of a number of the investors, Fall River businessman Carl Garcia, who testified that Correa couldn't discuss the terms of the sale of the Find It Network due to a non-disclosure agreement. "It made the defendant look like he's a big shot," said Hafer. "The gall is unbelievable." One investor, Fall River orthodontist Dr. David Cabaceras, who testified he was duped out of $145,000 in his snow owl investment, was one of a handful of witnesses who said they considered Correa like a son. Hafer said there was a pattern for Correa, who would receive investment money, then days later go on spending sprees that included expensive gifts for his girlfriend at the time, paying off student debt and credit card bills, and spending thousands on expensive hotels and dinners. "This is powerful evidence of intent," said Hafer. "This is shameless, continued stealing, without any regard for the fact that he's betraying people who trusted him." Investor Stephen Miller contributed thousands, making an additional payment of $25,000 at Correa's request. In keeping with the pattern, the defendant goes right back to work at right back to work, blowing it on himself, said Hafer. The defense said Correa was bad at math. "Even if he was, who cares?" Hafer said, saying that math skills had nothing to do with keeping accurate records. "Math has nothing to do with knowing what a business expense is versus a personal expense." With the corruption charges, Hafer again tied the cash payments from marijuana vendors to several cash purchases made immediately after. Rolexes, suits, and other luxury items, and cash deposits into his account. He also drew comparisons between the marijuana businessmen's accounts of what transpired, and then noted how similar they were. While Correa had co-conspirators in the alleged extortion, Anton Costa, Hildegard Camara, and David Hebert, Hafer said the entire scheme of shaking down the marijuana vendor fails without the person with the official power to sign letters of non-opposition. "Only one person could sign those letters," added Hafer. In his closing, Hafer told the jury that while the case was serious and important, the decision to convict was not even remotely close. "The defendant is guilty. He is very, very guilty," said Hafer. Reddington's closing argument, quite different. In his closing argument, defense attorney Kevin Reddington reminded the jury that words are easily manipulated. Words, unless you determine them to be accurate, are not evidence. Reddington seized on the immunity agreements handed out in this case. When a person receives immunity, jurors must scrutinize their testimony. Reddington impugned the character of the witnesses, saying that they committed perjury under oath to the grand jury. "Do you think these witnesses care about perjury? They have their immunity," he said. "You saw the conga line of witnesses that came in with immunity agreements or plea agreements." Reddington then described Tony Costa and Hildegard Camara, who had accepted plea deals in the case as the ringleaders of the pay-to-play scheme. There were 14 letters of non-opposition, he said, but the only ones that involved shakedowns involved Costa and Camara. He called one of the marijuana vendors, Brian Barros, and Costa big drug dealers. Barros, for instance, would not say the last name of who provided him with the pot he was offering as part of the payment to Costa. It suits his purposes to not be a snitch, not be a rat, said Reddington. Reddington reminded jurors that Costa was playing both sides. Camara testified he was upset with Costa because he was cutting him out. Part of his plea deal, Costa will not be charged with illicit drug dealing and is required to work with the IRS for back taxes. Reddington suggested Correa was targeted because he toppled the boss hog of Fall River, Sam Sutter, the former Bristol County District Attorney in a mayoral election. He said, all of a sudden, the feds are investigating. Reddington continued a strategy of highlighting Correa's youth and his inexperience, at one point noting Correa was, quote, so dumb that he doesn't even declare the $6,000 from Nordstrom he earned from a part-time job on his taxes, telling the jury Correa's mistakes were due to ignorance and not malicious intent. He also questioned the truthfulness of marijuana vendor and local convenience store owner Charles Salaby, who was the lone witness in the extortion case to have actually taken $75,000 in cash and exchanged it for a letter of non-opposition in the mayor's city-issued vehicle. Reddington suggested that there was no way Charles Salaby had $75,000 in wrapped stacks of $100 bills in his convenience store, where people pay for cigarettes and bottles of water in $5, $10, and $20 bills. Reddington characterized the deal with former Chief of Staff Jen Andrade as being a loan to help Correa with his legal defense. He admitted Correa went out and bought an $83,000 car, but he said Andrade knew this was happening. The contrasting styles continued in closing. The prosecution took all the counts as chronologically as possible and made many clarifications and explanations. Reddington took the counts backwards, starting with the extortion charges, then backtracking to Snow Owl, hopping forward again to tax fraud, then again to the bribery charge with many digressions. At one point, there were 438 people logged on to watch the closing argument remotely. What follows are excerpts from the Herald News live blog of the day's events. So you've gotten the news, and because this is such an extraordinary story, we're going to continue reading through. Many of these are notes and possibly not quite as factual, and there may even be redundancies from what I've just read you. That said, this is the topic of the day in Fall River and all over the South Coast. I think most of Massachusetts is watching this. So we will read excerpts from the Herald News' live blog. Now is the time for arguments. Judge Woodlock explained what closing arguments are meant to accomplish. At this point, they can argue to you, he said. Closing arguments, he said, are like the top of the jigsaw puzzle box. It shows the picture of how all the pieces of evidence fit together. And you've got to decide if those pieces fit together from what the lawyers say. He said if they hear something in closing arguments they didn't hear in evidence, they're supposed to disregard it. Old school, pay-to-play political corruption. Assistant U.S. Attorney Zachary Hafer gave the closing argument for the government. Beginning with a PowerPoint presentation, Hafer said, you've heard witness after witness say he lied to him. After the last 2 weeks, two separate tax preparers say he cheated on his taxes. Marijuana vendors describe old-school pay-to-play. He said over the past 2 weeks, the jurors have heard overwhelming evidence of Correa's greed and hubris, and that they've heard overwhelming evidence of lying, cheating, stealing, and shakedowns. He convinced and persuaded people from all walks of life to do what he wanted, Hafer said, and what he wanted was money, and what he wanted was power. Starting with Snow Owl. Hafer went in order of the defendants, starting with Alec Mendez, his business partner in Find It Networks. The Snow Owl and tax portion showed Correa's guilty of wire fraud and tax counts, he said. One of the core elements of his story as a successful entrepreneur was completely made up, he said, as Mendez testified, Find It made little to no money. Then Dr. David Cabaceras saw the defendant like a son, Hafer said. And even when he knew he got fleeced, he still wanted to help Correa. Look at the timing of the checks, Hafer said. Within weeks of getting Cabaceras' first check, the defendant stole $10,000 to buy himself a Mercedes. The next check for $15,000, meant for software? Well, the defendant needed it for something nice from Burberry, Hafer said. Hafer did drop a bomb that at one point Correa used Cabaceras' money to buy sex toys from Amazon, and he presented a receipt. The defendant threw away a lot on cash. Cash, common sense tells you, is harder to trace, Hafer said. Investor Stephen Miller thought Correa was boy wonder. The next big thing, Miller said. Correa said he wasn't taking one dime because his payment would come at the end. Instead, Correa used the investment money to pay off his credit card. And he gave money to the Flint Merchants Association to buy a school. Just as he was launching... It's a very long story. Just as he was changing his political career. This is powerful evidence of intent, said Hafer. This is shameless, continued stealing, without any regard for the fact that he's betraying the people who trusted him. Sergio Arias, who testified that he hired Correa to create a website for him, testified the defendant ripped him off. After sitting in trial for 2 weeks, do you have any doubt Correa's the type of person who would threaten to have Mr. Arias' friend arrested, Hafer said. Natalie Cleveland, the ex-girlfriend, testified that Find It Networks was sold for several million dollars. This was clever deceit, Hafer said. Hafer says the amount that Correa claimed to people he sold Find It for is significant because it not only enabled the Snow Owl scheme to proceed, but it also helped to explain the lavish lifestyle he was leading as an otherwise unemployed city councilor making $16,000 a year. Hafer seized on two lies witnesses described. Carlos Cesar said they never put up Snow Owl stickers in business storefronts, and Cleveland said she never saw Correa put down flyers or talk to a hotel employee about Snow Owl. He showed the video again from the debate with Sam Sutter where Correa promised to spend taxpayers' money wisely, like he did with his business. Carl Garcia, there was a new twist. The defendant told him there was a non-disclosure agreement with the sale of the Find It Network app. There was none, but it made him look like a big shot. He told Pat Todd and the mill owners that he sold it, but he couldn't discuss it. And again, realize these are notes from a blog. These are not the reportage that would normally come. We already read that. Pervasive theft. Hafer said 2013 offered the most powerful evidence of intent. IRS agent Sandy Lemansky, using conservative methodology, testified Correa spent 79% of investor money on himself. Essentially, $4 out of every $5 was spent on himself. This was pervasive theft, said Hafer. It was a con. For what? So he could live the high life? What a guy. Hafer seized on another lie. Correa told Sallie Mae, the student loan organization, that he was a full-time grad student and couldn't pay his student loan. There's no evidence he was a grad student, Hafer said. Yet, less than 2 weeks, he spends over $2,000 on plane tickets and two nights at Chatham Bars Inn. He was poor when he had to pay his loan, but rich when he wanted to impress Natalie, Hafer said. In August of 2014, in trying to get more money from Miller, Correa said, I've given you my word, I'll make this a tremendous success. Investor Mark Eisenberg got a new version, that Find It Networks was bought by a group of Cambridge, by a group out of Cambridge, and they sold it to Facebook. Heisenberg's investment agreement protecting integrity of the company and the investment. Instead of investing in Snow Owl, Hafer said, he made a number of personal purchases and even wrote out a $3,000 check to the Fall River Children's Aquarium, even getting a plaque in his honor. Hafer said that plaque should say the names of investors Mark Eisenberg and Victor Martinez because the donation was made with their money. In 2015, in keeping with the pattern, soon after receiving investment money from Miller, Correa spent the money on Twin Rivers, cologne, Valentine's Day River Cruise, and Christian Louboutin shoes. That the cruise was a business expense is another silly argument jurors should reject, Hafer said, noting that Lemansky said there were no records from Snow Owl of any customers. The tax returns. then to Stacia Vieira, the tax preparer who testified. Correa said he had no employment income. Snow Owl just vanished in the 2013 returns, Hafer said. Hafer said that when Correa went to file his tax returns, Snow Owl, his baby that he worked for 24/7, completely escaped his memory. He argued that this was deliberate. Closing argument begins for the defense. Defense attorney Kevin Reddington reminded the jury about their duty to be fair and impartial. Remarkably, he said, not one person tried to get out of this case. Reddington said cases built upon evidence, witnesses, photographs, documents, etc. Words are easily manipulated. Words, unless you determine them to be accurate, aren't evidence, he said. For example, he said Natalie Cleveland said at one point that Correa sold Find It for millions of dollars, but earlier she had said hundreds of thousands of dollars. Talking about intent, he said, is there one person that truly believes Correa intended to steal money when he started the app and solicited investments? Reddington pointed out a May 8, 2014 deposit from Dr. Cabaceres for $6,000. 2 days later, he said, this money was paid to Statewide Software. Reddington seized on the immunity agreements handed out in this case. When a person receives immunity, jurors must scrutinize their testimony. Reddington impugned the character of the witnesses, saying that they committed perjury under oath to the grand jury. Do you think these witnesses care about perjury? They have their immunity, he said. You saw the conga line of witnesses that came in, with people with immunity agreements or plea agreements. He said some of these witnesses can actually hope to get probation on case, suggesting that this was their motivation for agreeing to plead guilty. Charest, Salaby, Costa, Kamara, he listed all that have some type of agreement. There were 14 letters of non-opposition, he said, but the only ones that involved shakedowns involved Costa and Kamara. These guys were cutting each other's throat back and forth. Reddington then described Costa and Kamara as the ringleaders of the pay-to-play scheme. David Brayton was upset, he said, because he's not being contacted by City Hall and was wondering what he could do to get his letter. So he contacted his golf buddy, Tony Costa. And Costa said, there's a guy you got to talk to, Kamara. They set up a golf match, and Kamara told Costa, I'll take care of it. Kamara testified that he contacted Correa when Brayton's non-opposition letter was sent out. The letter was already signed, sealed, and delivered on the same day as the check. Costa reached out to Brayton, and Costa got a check for $100,000. Costa deposited it into his account. Costa then said he drew on it in dribs and drabs for Correa. Where's the evidence? It's coming from Costa, said Reddington. After he made the deposit, he made a withdrawal for $100,000 to split with his ex-wife. With Barros, he said, Costa was upset. He wasn't going to get any money. He poked holes in Barros' testimony, saying he took $25,000 or $20,000 or $30,000 and put the cash in an envelope. He noted Costa got the cash, not Correa. Kamara's testimony was that he was horrified about the cash in the shed. Kamara, who got a job because of this guy, takes the money and brings it into his bathroom and wipes it down, Reddington said. Then he gave it to Costa. And what does Costa do with it? Well, he keeps the money, Reddington said. He called Barros and Costa big drug dealers. Barros, he said, wouldn't say the last name of who provided him with a pot he was offering as part of the payment to Costa. It suits his purpose to not be a snitch, not be a rat, said Reddington. There were questions about Guimond Farms. Reddington described Salaby and Barros as being best friends, suggesting they would know what was going on with each other in these deals. Reddington said there was no quid pro quo by him, indicating Correa. Reddington questioned $75,000 in cash in the safe at Guimond Farms. No one asked Salaby where the money came from, except me, he said. Reddington suggested that Salaby didn't have $75,000 in the safe in wrapped $100 bills. He described Guimond Farms as a neighborhood convenience store where people buy waters and cigarettes, paying with $5, $10, or $20 bills. Salaby would have you believe he blithely pulls up, takes the $75,000, puts it in the back, and he gets a letter of non-opposition, Reddington said. Salaby said Correa handed him, within seconds, a signed letter of non-opposition. Carla Dutra, a former secretary for Joe Macy, dealt what Reddington called the death blow to the prosecution's case, saying she mailed the letter, signed July 5th, directly to Salaby's lawyer. Correa doesn't write the letters, Reddington said. The city's law department writes the letters. Where's one piece of evidence that Correa called Salaby? Reddington said. Throwing blame onto Bernier and Sheehan. Of the investors, Reddington said, did one person say I want my money back? No. Then Reddington tried to pin much of Snow Owl on Nick Bernier and Stafford Sheehan. He characterized them as running the business at that point because Correa was busy running for mayor. Look at Nick Bernier's email welcoming our new CEO, Staff Sheehan, he said, adding that Correa was not the one who went out and solicited the accountant. Charest. Reddington described Sheehan as the face of Snow Owl. Reddington said Sheehan backed away from Snow Owl like a poodle on a linoleum floor, he said. Of Sheehan, I had nothing to do with it. Bull. Reddington said the Snow Owl investors didn't invest due to Find It networks. It was the app itself. It was an intriguing idea, he said. He's so dumb. Reddington did admit that Correa may have spent money improvidently. He's not the brightest bulb when it comes to doing business, Reddington said, suggesting that Correa had no ill intent when it came to mislabeling personal expenses as business, but that he had zero idea of what he was doing. This is in stark contrast to the self-described brilliant and confident entrepreneur who sold himself to voters. Reddington noted that Mark Eisenberg and Josh Harding both testified Snow Owl was a good business idea. He again stated that the helicopter tour business, the personal trainer, and the Valentine's Day cruise operator became clients. Of the strip club expense, Reddington said that was a celebration after the app got accepted into the Apple App Store. The intent at the time that he was receiving income, he thought mistakenly that this was money to build the app, according to Reddington. However, the tax preparer and the IRS agent testified that he didn't declare any income. He's so dumb that he doesn't even declare the $6,000 from Nordstrom, shouted Reddington above his client. Reddington advised the jury to look at the facts, to listen to instruction to the judge, to focus on specific intent. The government, he said, has the burden of proof that there was a scheme to steal money, to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he did not act in good faith. So, notes are tough to read because they're, I don't know why they print them verbatim, but they're little thoughts, and many of those that I just read, you probably had a tough time following. I know I did, and I was reading them. They're just, they're thoughts to be used later to write the article, which started this reading. So, with that, I want to make sure that we read the obituaries for two different folks from Fall River. Robert J. Bob Bisson passed at the age of 61 on May 8th at his home with his wife and faithful companion Bert by his side. He was the loving husband of Ann Bisson, to whom he had been married for 19 years. He was born in Fall River and was third generation to own and operate Bisson Oil of Fall River, having taken over from his father in 1996. He was a competitive cyclist who traveled to races up and down the East Coast and had been a member of the Spin Arts racing team. As an expert rider, he won multiple championships over the years. When not working or racing, he enjoyed reading about American history and was a member of the Fall River Historical Society. Above all else, Bob loved vacationing with his wife in Kennebunkport, Maine, and spending time with his family and friends. Memorial service, to which relatives and friends are invited, will be held this Thursday, May 13th, at 7 p.m. at Manuel Rogers Funeral Home, located at 1521 North Main Street in Fall River. A memorial visitation will be held Thursday from 4 to 7 p.m. prior to the service. In lieu of flowers, donations in Bob's name can be made to Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, P.O. Box 849-168, Boston, Mass., or to Make-A-Wish America, 1702 East Highland Ave, Suite 400 in Phoenix, Arizona. The other obituary today is of Susan Collins of Fall River, who at the age of 70 passed on May 6th. She was wife of the late Thomas Collins and former wife of the late Joseph Sullivan. She was born in Baltimore, Maryland, and grew up in New York City, settling in Fall River in 1974. Susan was a graduate of Fairhaven High School and later in life UMass Dartmouth, where she received a bachelor's degree. She worked in accounting for many years for several different manufacturers. In accordance with her wishes, Susan will be cremated and a memorial gathering will be Saturday, May 15th, from 2 to 5 p.m. with a prayer service at 4 p.m. in the Hathaway Home for Funerals, 1813 Robeson Street in Fall River. I've reached the end of my reading for today. If you know someone who could use our service, you're interested in volunteering or donating, please call 508-539-2030. As always, thanks for tuning in and all your continued support. This is your reader, Eric, saying be well, be safe, look after each other. Bye for now.